Say, this is Mom Talk with Denise LaRosa.
Mom Talk with Denise LaRosa.
This is Mom Talk with Denise LaRosa, a podcast created by a mom for moms that is designed to motivate, inspire, and inform you along your journey in motherhood. I am your host, Denise LaRosa. Are you subscribed to my newsletter? Why not? Get the latest in mommy gifts, inspiration, and resources by subscribing at www.denisenlarosa.com. Let's do this mommy thing together. Hello, moms, and thank you for joining me today. Wow, raising teens. Just saying that makes my heart race. While I'm the mother of two toddlers, I know so many of you are raising teenagers, and let's face it, raising teens in this day and age is no easy task. Today's teenagers are dealing with so much, from academic stresses to social media and so much more. Today's guest is here to coach you through the challenges that come with raising teenagers, while also giving all of us moms some sound advice on raising children of all ages with her universal messages and advice. Deborah C. Owen is a number one Amazon best-selling author dedicated to reducing stress and conflict between parents and their children. As a renowned speaker, parenting expert, life coach, and national board certified teacher, you may have seen her quoted on CBS, ABC, Fox, or NBC. As the creator of the Pied Piper parenting model, Deborah transforms frayed and frenzied families back to health and happiness through compassionate leadership. Her company, You Can Raise Great Kids, offers innovative training and parent coaching to keep emotions in check while communicating more effectively with kids for both peace and the best outcomes. Beyond her own experience as a parent of three, Deborah has spent many years in the public school system as a dedicated teacher of teens from all backgrounds. Deborah's articles have appeared in numerous journals, and her latest book, Social Media Fascination, offers guidelines for teaching kids how to use social media with a purpose. Join me and Deborah as we discuss raising our children in a way that encourages growth within our kids while also diminishing household stress.
Debbie, thank you so much for doing this interview today. And this is a topic that I can just honestly say I am not an expert in dealing with teens because, of course, I am a newbie. I have a 2-year-old and 1-year-old. However, I love it. I'm having a ball, but I'm so far from the teenage years, and it's insane because I feel like as a 34-year-old, I remember what I was like as a teen, and that's like pre-social media and all that good stuff. So, yeah. Dear Lord, my heart goes out to parents. So I have so many listeners that are parents of teenagers, so I really appreciate you coming on and just really giving us some valuable insight.
Yes, this is going to be great. I'm happy to be able to share and help your audience. This sounds good.
Cool. So, raising teens. Whoa. Can you please give my listeners some practical tips on raising teens in such a way that you can reduce household stress?
Absolutely. The key to reducing household stress, honestly, is reducing your own stress as a parent. And this doesn't matter how old your kids are for this one. The idea is you want to be able to approach your child from a calm place. And it's so easy for us to just get all worked up just like our kids because our brains see our kids freaking out and we automatically feel threatened. I mean, that's the evolutionary thing about what's going on there is we feel threatened and so we start to get all worked up ourselves. So the issue is you take intentional time to slow yourself down and remain calm. And if you do that, most people can't stay in the presence of, you know, say a brick wall. we have these mirror neurons in our brains, and when in the presence of something that's freaking out, they mirror that freaking out. And in the presence of something that's calm, they can't stay in that freaking out situation. And if you've got an older child, they're going to either burst into tears or they're going to go running out of the room and slam the door, or they'll just eventually find a way to calm themselves down, because if you are calm, they can't stay all upset themselves, at least not in your presence. So I actually have a technique. Can I share my technique?
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Okay, great. I call it the A to E technique. And A is to start by being aware. So be aware of how you are feeling. First of all, almost as if you were suspended from the ceiling, looking down at yourself, observing what's going on in the room. This is actually a mindfulness technique, but it works really, really well. And if you practice this, you get good at doing it fast. So you think of, oh my gosh, I'm feeling really upset. I'm getting really upset. My heart is beating faster. My breathing is getting shallow and fast. My hands are clenched. My fist is clenched. And I'm sure that all of those bad hormones are coursing through my body and making me feel stressed, and I don't want to feel stressed. So if you can become aware of how you're feeling, that's the first part. Also be aware of what's going on for your child. You know, there's that halt, hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. Is your child freaking out because of any one of those things? Did they go through a situation with a friend? Are they feeling left out of some social situation? I mean, there's so many things that could be going on with your teen or your child, and we could talk even more at some other point about, you know, how to understand what's really going on with your kid. But for this A, just be aware. I'm upset. My kid is upset. Let's see what we can do next. B is to breathe. And there are a number of kind of calming breathing techniques that you can use. I mean, the simplest one is just to calm yourself down and take 3 slow breaths. And I hope the listeners are catching how I'm slowing down, and even they can slow down as you take 3 slow breaths. And then there are some other breathing techniques you can use as well. There's the 4-7-8, and there are some other mindfulness techniques you can do. But the point is, you intentionally calm your physiology, which helps a lot. Then C is to calm. That's exactly right. And I suggest to people that they imagine going to their favorite calm place, their Zen place. And so as you're doing the breathing technique, calm yourself down by going to your Zen place. And that's when you basically look like a brick wall to your freaking out child. And then the D is, once people have calmed themselves down a little bit, that's discuss. You know, you discuss. I see that you're upset with something. And this is where you go to E also, empathy. I see that you're upset. I'm sorry that you're upset. Let's talk about what's upsetting you. Or I understand that it could be really difficult for you to share the remote control right now. Let's talk about it in a minute when everybody's calmed down. So that's discussing with empathy. And that's how you can reduce stress in your home. It works really, really well.
That's incredible, Debbie. And there were 2 points to what you were saying that really hit home. And I'm listening to this, and although I'm a mother of 2 itty-bitty ones, they also bring about their own levels of stress
yes.
for parents. Yeah, it's like there were takeaways for all of us, no matter what mm-hmm. ages our children are. And there were 2 things, Debbie, that just really were aha moments. Number one, being intentional, because mm-hmm. even in our relationships with adults, like when we're at that moment of anger and stress, oftentimes that's where we just kind of, you know, fly off the handle, so to speak, and we're not really intentional about our approach or how we are dealing with those emotions. And then
right.
when you also mentioned about calming down and then discussing whatever the issue is or whatever the issues are once you have calmed down, because the truth of the matter is, as a former elementary school teacher, I could never get my point across until I myself was calm, and also, more importantly, the child was calm. Because if you're just,
right.
you know, spouting off, nobody's listening to anyone when their emotions are heightened, when they're really angry or upset. So those are just some really key takeaways from that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do tell people that you can use this A to E technique in any relationship situation, whether it's with a spouse or an ex-spouse or a coworker or somebody in the grocery store who's upset with you. I mean, you can use this in any situation. And you're absolutely right, because when our brains kick into that fight or flight aspect, the hormones are such that it actually shuts down the thinking part of your brain. You cannot think rationally when you have all that adrenaline and cortisol flooding through your body. It's not possible, because your body is just automatically trained to run away or fight. And so if you reduce those hormones and bring in the oxytocin through the calmness and the breathing, then you're able to connect much better and be a lot less stressed. And you're right also, it needs to be, the discussion needs to happen when people are not all freaking out.
Yeah. Oh, this is awesome. Thank you for sharing that. I'm definitely going to use that in quite a few of my relationships. And yeah, when you said with your spouse, I definitely am like, yeah, after this interview, I'm going to have a talk with my husband about the A to E.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, and key also is empathy, without any judgment or anything like that, just acknowledging that the other person has these feelings and emotions. Just acknowledge it, and when because then they feel heard and understood, and who doesn't want to feel heard and understood, right?
Right. Oh, that's incredible. I love that. So this leads me to my second question, is really the connection piece. How can mothers connect with their kids, in particular teenage children? Because let's face it, you know, I'm 34, like I said, you know, but at the same time, it hasn't been all that long ago. I feel that my mom, I just remember her saying something, for as close as we have always been, and even closer now, I remember during my teenage years, my senior year of high school, I remember her saying one time, "Why do you hate me?" And that hurt me so bad, because I didn't hate her, but there was definitely a disconnect. So how can mothers connect with their kids?
Well, the first key thing, honestly, is to intentionally, again, you know, so much about parenting is doing it with intention, but intentionally set aside at least 10 minutes a day to be with each of your children alone. Now, I recognize that for single parents, particularly with young children, that can be really, really hard. And I also recognize that that can be really difficult for families that have 5 and 6 kids. Okay, so maybe it's every other day instead of every day. Ideally, it would be every single day you spend a minimum of 10 minutes with each of your children to develop those connections. And during those 10 minutes, you do whatever your child wants to do. Now, screen time is an issue. Maybe you say once or twice a week we'll do screen time, the rest of the week we do other things or something like that, because some kids will want to play games with their parents, and I think you should, but you wouldn't want to do that every day because there's not quite as much interaction. Ideally, you play a board game, you go shoot hoops, you throw a ball around, you play Barbie dolls. Yeah, whatever it is your kid wants to do. And you put away your phone, you don't look at your computer, and again, it's no judging and no giving advice and no interrupting, just totally focusing on your kid. So that's the number one tip, is to just totally focus 10 to 20 minutes a day on each of your children. Then the other thing is to listen, trying to understand. So in other words, we hear what people say a lot, but how much do we really, really listen deeply in order to understand? Do we listen to, I use listen in quotes, do we listen to their body language? Do we listen to what their eyes are saying? You know, do we listen to what's behind the words that they're actually using? So if we really listen to understand, that will make a huge difference. And also the active listening and showing empathy that we talked about a moment ago, and saying, oh, yeah, I hear you, and, oh, that must have been frustrating for you, and did your friend really say that? How did that make you feel? Those sorts of things. So that kind of listening is huge. Also, let your kid be a master at something and teach it to you. Maybe they've learned a new recipe that they want to share with you. Maybe they're better at technology than you are, which happens a lot. Maybe they've learned something in their auto mechanics class at school that they can teach you about your car. You know, whatever it is, maybe they've been taking riding lessons and they want to teach you a little bit about how to go on a trail ride or whatever. Whatever your child can teach you, let them do that, because that really builds them up and it gives them a lot of self-esteem. And then the last thing I'll say, which is especially for teenagers, is to connect with them at night. Now, I know that I used to stay up later than my parents when I was a teen, and I know my kids, who are, our youngest is now 19, our kids used to stay up later than we did. So if you have to take a nap the next day, do it. But the best time to connect with teenagers is when they've gone to their room and they're either doing homework or they're on their cell phones or whatever it is they're doing, and you just walk in and say, "So, how you doing? You know, just hoping things are going today. How's that really? How are things going with your friend Kim? You know, or how did the basketball tryouts go the other day?" Honestly, nighttime, right before bed, their guard is down, it's the best time to connect with teenagers.
I have more with Deborah, but first, let's take a moment to thank our sponsor. The Pittsburgh Association for the Education of Young Children, also known as PACEY, works to support high-quality care and education for young children from birth until age 9 across 10 counties in southwestern Pennsylvania. PACEY provides professional development, community resources, and advocacy for the needs and rights of our children, their families, and the individuals who work with them. PACEY works to educate parents, individuals working in the field, and other stakeholders about the best practices in early childhood education and to help improve the quality of services provided to the children of our region. PACEY also works to communicate the value of early childhood education so that as a community, we can make wise investments in the future of our children. In addition, PACEY elevates the status of professionals working in the field of early childhood education so that we can continue to attract and retain individuals who are highly skilled and committed to children and their optimal development. PACEY is a founding partner in the Pre-K for PA campaign. As a parent and former elementary school teacher, I truly value the work that PACEY is doing. To learn more, please visit www.paeyc.org today.
Yeah, like when you said that, I instantly went back to 1999 and was like, oh yeah, I definitely can see where that's the best time to connect, because I still am a night owl, but yeah, that's so true.
Yeah, there were many nights when my kids were teens when I stayed, and I stumbled on this by accident. I didn't do it. I mean, I've since read it since I became a family coach, but at the time I wasn't a family coach when my kids were teenagers, and I just kind of instinctively stumbled on it and found that it worked really well. And we had lots of late night conversations. I took a lot of quick cat naps the next day.
But whatever it takes. And I just love, Debbie, that you shared that, because we're in we're into the world of busyness, it seems, you know, where we're just on that treadmill of life and we're just going, especially in those teenage years. You know, children are involved in a lot of extracurricular activities and parents are working. And so I think that is it sounds so simple, but it's such a key to really building those bonds. Like that quality time is so important.
Definitely. It really is. It really is.
Cool. So as parents, we are the leaders of our household. It may not always feel that way, but we truly are. So can you break it down and explain the role of the mother and the father in the household?
I would be happy to. In fact, this plays right into my proprietary method. And part of that is the three C's, which is control, connect, and conduct. And so we've actually already talked about control your emotions, right? That was one of the first things we talked about. And then connect, we just talked about connecting. And then conduct. I'm a semi-professional musician. I've played violin since I was in first grade. I sing with semi-professional choruses in Boston. I direct a church choir. So I've been a musician my whole life, essentially. And I like to think of the parent as almost the conductor of an orchestra. So you're conducting your family where every voice is important, but they're not all playing loudly at the same time. You know what I mean? And different aspects of the sound are important at different times. And then the other piece of this that I talk about too is servant leadership. I really believe that the parent is a servant leader in the family. And that essentially means that someone is first a servant and then secondarily a leader. And the servant leader makes sure that other people's needs are met first while, and this is key, helping them to grow healthier, wiser, more autonomous, more authentically themselves. So the decisions that we make as the servant leader in our family are all about helping our children grow to be wise, healthy, autonomous. You know, we're raising adults, actually. We're not really raising kids, right? We're raising kids to become adults. And we gradually have to let go of the hold that we have onto them. There are a lot of parents who feel like the leadership role means you do it my way or you take the highway, that kind of a thing. And that just simply doesn't work in our society. We've moved way past that many, many decades ago. And it has to be a more collaborative experience. The role of the servant leader is the person who helps their child by giving them opportunities to grow in responsibility and independence. And sometimes that means taking a risk, and that's kind of scary for both the parent and the kid. But it needs to be done so that by the time they're 18 or 19, they're an adult ready or just about ready to go out on their own. Yeah.
Yes, I love that. That just was so enlightening, and it's so true. I mean, how often, and not, you know, no disrespect to our parents or our grandparents. I mean, I am blessed. I grew up with an amazing mother and grandmother who helped raise me. And my dad was around too, although my parents were divorced. But, you know, how often have we heard, but why? Because I said so, because that's the way it is.
Right.
And
doesn't work.
It doesn't. Like, with my personality, that just never set well with me. I want to know more. And it wasn't that I was being a smarty pants or, you know, trying to rebel. And a lot of times that got misplaced. Like, that I was only, like, it was almost like I was being disrespectful for questioning. But I just wanted to, I just wanted a deeper understanding. And then I could follow better if I knew why things were the way they were, or why it was headed in this direction, or why that particular decision was made.
Right.
So you were so right on so many levels with that.
Right, right. And, you know, one of the psychologists whom I've studied, Alfred Adler, he even says that a family actually should be a democracy. Now, I'll add in that I think the parent is still the president of that democracy.
Right.
You know, they set limits, and they, you know, they offer choices. I think that's huge. If you offer choices, if you tell your kid what to do from the time he's 2 until he's 20, he's not going to know how to make choices on his own when he goes out. He will have no practice making choices. So you have to give your child choices all the way through. You start out with, do you want the red cup or the blue cup? And then you get to the point where you're saying, do you want to take riding lessons or do you want to take soccer class? So they need to learn how to make choices based on what is workable in the family, and it needs to be a collaborative environment within the limits that are set and workable, you know, based on parents' schedules and things of that sort. But the kid has to have a say, otherwise they're going to become defiant. If you've got a defiant kid, it's probably because you're not offering choice and because you're probably just telling them too much what to do, and I can help with that.
Great. Yeah, that's amazing. And you really touched on something that I do a lot in this household, you know, having 2 toddlers is, you know, again, like, you really touched on it in a perfect way. Like, for example, with my children, you know, with my oldest, you're going to have dinner. That's just my rule for that particular time. That's what we're doing. But I will say things like offer the choice of, do you want, you know, your spaghetti on the green plate or the purple plate? And so that's,
there you go.
Yeah, I love how you said that, because it's so true, because some people are afraid of letting go of that power. I mean, let's face it, you know, like,
yeah,
let's keep it real here. Like, you feel like, well, you're the parent, you're the authoritative figure, that's your job. Well, yes and no. I mean, to a certain extent, but the way you laid it out really makes it clear for us exactly what our role is.
Great, great. That's good. That's good.
Yeah, absolutely. So what are some strategies and steps that parents can take to eliminate disrespect in the home? Because we hear this, I see it already, like, from when I was younger to now, I hear kids talking to their parents, Debbie, in ways that literally make me sick to my stomach. I mean, I will hear children, even adult age children, I'm sorry, like, my brother's 45, I'm 34, and we still would never dream of telling our parent to shut up or, you know, and I mean, the list goes on. So what are some strategies and steps that parents can take to get rid of that or not even allow it into the home?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, it starts by what you model for your children. You know, we were talking earlier about losing your temper and yelling at kids. Well, if that's what they see you doing, they're going to yell too. And if you're if they hear you telling them or other people to shut up, then that's what they're going to say too. They're little mimics. They they do exactly what you do. So what do you want to see in your children? You start there. And it's not going to solve all problems. I recognize that. But you start with that. I want to see my child speaking to me respectfully. I want to see my child speaking to me calmly. So that's the way you speak to your child. You start by respecting your child first. And I know that sounds crazy to some people who are coming from kind of this old school mentality, but it's absolutely true. You start by speaking respectfully to your child. And that includes your body language, your attitude, your attentiveness. We already talked about, you know, spending at least 10 minutes a day with each kid. So that's how you start the whole process, is by really showing respect to your kid. Then it's followed by the listening. You know, we were talking about active listening and really hearing what your child says, listening for understanding. And then basically saying, hey, I appreciate it. You know, catch your child doing stuff that's good. Don't always just talk about the negative stuff. In fact, I've heard a couple of different numbers, but it's something like 5 to 1. In order to balance out one negative, you have to say 5 positive things to a person. And I actually heard recently that it's more like 19 to 1 if you want your child to actually feel really good about themselves. So that means that you need to be constantly catching your child doing something good and say, hey, I really liked how you helped me set the dinner table tonight. That was great. Thank you so much. Or, hey, I'm really happy that you spoke so nicely to your brother today when you were both wanting to watch the TV. Thank you for doing that. You know, and constantly verbalizing when you catch them doing something good. It's really, really important. And then they'll begin to recognize that they get positive attention when they do good things. Then in addition to that, you identify when you see respect in other people, whether that's when you're out, you know, at the grocery store, or if it's a book you're reading or a movie that you've watched. You know, say something like, don't you think that young man really helped that older lady get across the street? That was so nice of him. Or you can say, boy, that guy in the store, he was really yelling at the clerk. That was very disrespectful, don't you think? And, you know, just kind of identify when you see the good and the bad out in the world and talk about how the other person must have felt, whether it was a good situation or a bad situation. The elderly lady probably felt really good when she was helped. The clerk at the store probably felt really bad. So that's really important. You start that with 2- and 3- and 4-year-old kids. And then also think about what qualities you respect in other people, whether that's your spouse or your clergy person or your neighbor down the road or a teacher that you've had or something like that. What is it that you respect in other people? Oh, I respect their generosity. I respect their kindness. I respect, you know, make a list of the things that you respect in a couple of people, and then look for those qualities in your kid, and then tell them again when you see those qualities. Again, verbalize your appreciation. Say, wow, you're a really kind person when you help your sister with her homework. Or with a teenager especially, you could say, I really appreciate how thoughtful it was for you to offer to go pick up your brother after his soccer game. So that's another way to do it. And then again, the other way to eliminate disrespect, as we said earlier, is to remain calm, go to your zen place, and don't let your child push your buttons. Because if they push your buttons, they're going to keep pushing your buttons. And it's better not to let them push your buttons and kind of start over again.
Right. Oh, yeah. And as a former elementary school teacher, I can definitely attest to that. I mean,
yes.
You know, they will test you, and once they know they've hit like a little trigger point there, it's just, they're just going to ride on that, and it's going to be a long road.
That is so true. That is so true.
Yeah. Yeah, so this has been absolutely wonderful, Debbie, and we most certainly need to definitely call upon your expertise in the future. We'll definitely have you back. So in the meantime, we really appreciate you here in the Mom Talk community, and we need this. So how can we stay connected to you and access your resources?
Great. Thanks for asking. Well, first of all, I am a co-host for another podcast called Mighty Married Moms, which can be found at mightymarriedmoms.com. And so that's one way people can find us. We actually have a YouTube channel as well as being found on iTunes. And my own personal website is at youcanraisegreatkids.com. And I post videos and actually another short podcast called You Can Raise Great Kids and in the blog area there. And I have some useful tips. You can sign up and get 5 A-plus steps to success for stressed out parents. You can join my email list, and I send out useful tips about twice a week. And then I also have a couple of products over on the product page. I have a book that would be especially interesting to parents called Social Media Fascination, about how to teach kids to use social media well. And I have a course that I'm just about to upload to that page too. It's called From Sassy to Sociable, which talks a lot about some of the things that we mentioned today in terms of helping kids learn to be respectful and how to have a calm, de-stressed household and such like that. So All of those things can be found on my website, and I would be happy to speak with anybody personally, too, just reaching out to me through the contact page.
I am so excited to announce that I will be speaking at PodCamp Pittsburgh. Mom Talk has also been delivering presentations throughout the Pittsburgh area on the topic of ways to foster learning at home. Do you have an event where your audience could benefit from one of my talks or presentations? Topics include, but are not limited to, the following: blogging, creating and hosting an audio podcast, inspiring messages for mothers, ways to foster learning in children, how a grandmother's love impacts the world, and being a mompreneur. Feel free to contact me at Denise@deniseandlarosa.com for more information and to schedule me at your event. Thank you, Deborah, for being a part of the Mom Talk community. I will leave you all with this quote by Frederick Douglass: "It is easier to build strong children than to repair broken men." You have been listening to Mom Talk with Denise LaRosa. Stay connected by heading over to www.deniseandlarosa.com, where you will find plenty of resources and encouragement to help you along your journey in motherhood. Be sure to share this podcast with your mom friends. And until next time, there's no perfect way to be a mother, but a million ways to be a good one.